A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 304. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Supercar. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
This was a 1961 and 1962 black and white series from Gerry Anderson and company. 39 25-minute episodes, and this was the first science fiction Super Marionation series. So we are talking about marionette puppets in the style that only Gerry Anderson and their team could do, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is the remarkable team of Anderson and Co. and their fantastic signature sort of incredible vehicles, the remarkable adventures that they get into. And as you say, Brian, this is the first Super Marionation sci-fi show. And it's quite interesting to look at it now compared to some of the later shows, because we can really see the basics, the prototypes of what will go on to become sort of like almost like a dominant genre for Anderson in the 60s.
Yes, absolutely.
So last time we touched upon the incredible supercar and its remarkable abilities, plus its interesting and slightly eccentric crew members. So let's give you a flavour of some of their adventures just by touching on a few of the episodes as we go along. As we've said, it contains many elements that would become regular tropes for Gerry Anderson. And in particular, I guess, rescues is what Supercar does very well. So the very first episode is indeed called Rescue, and it features the first public test flight of Supercar, because it's the only vehicle capable of reaching a plane that has gone down in the middle of the ocean. And they must, Mike Mercury must pilot Supercar in order to rescue a young boy called Jimmy and his monkey Mitch, who then become regular members of the team and the show itself.
Absolutely. And it wasn't the only rescue they would do. In Deep Seven, Mike Mercury pilots Supercar below the surface into the ocean to rescue the crew of a stranded bathysphere.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, from the oceans, they go to we've had planes, we've had submarines, so we get trains as well. There's a runaway train episode, Brian.
Of course there is.
With master spies sabotaging an atomic-powered experimental train, which of course is hurtling towards the end of the line, and can Supercar intervene in time to save the passengers and crew of that particular runaway vehicle? And then of course they like to venture out into sort of other types of adventures and other media. So in Take One, the remarkable Dr. Beaker is making his own movie of Supercar. But of course, when he sends his film away to be developed and it's returned, he finds that he's got somebody else's film instead. And somehow or other, they've stumbled upon a another international spy ring that they have to break into, or at least try and put an end to. And that's actually, I think, Dr. Beaker doing a little bit of, is he almost Steed in that episode, Brian, with his umbrella and his bowler hat and his suit?
Maybe a little bit, yeah. And it would be right around the era for the early episodes of The Avengers, the British spy series. So yeah, that was may well be what they were thinking of. And in other episodes, Mitch the monkey manages to blast himself into space. There's one where the crew are shrunk to one-third normal size. And then there is another one with time standing still for some characters, when they encounter aliens from another planet. So all of these things from various styles and genres are coming in, which is kind of fun.
Yes, and we mentioned some of this fun last time, because this was, it seems to me, this is a very sort of 60s interest in sci-fi and spy-fi. So I mentioned Dr. Beaker's got, you know, an umbrella that's got sort of almost James Bond or Steed-like abilities. And then we get, as you say, you know, science fiction's obsession with miniaturization and people being shrunk in size. That was a 60s thing. A lot of shows had a time stop episode that seemed to crop up. There's also bits and pieces about brainwashing and mind control or hypnotism, as usual, in these sort of shows. So lots of sort of fun bits and pieces that were quite popular in the 60s, it seems to me, Brian.
Yes, and some of them, they were quite on the early edge of, I think, with some of those spy-style things. That was quite early for that. And some of the others had been established more in the 50s already, and they were jumping onto those as well.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, as we say, this is a puppet show or a marionette show, a super marionette show, I guess. And so along the way, in some of the episodes, the puppet designers and sculptors seem to be having some fun making puppet heads that look like particularly Hollywood actors. So I noticed there's a Marlena Dietrich at one point. I think Master Spy looks very much like Sydney Greenstreet from the Bogart movies. And there's even an evil scientist they encounter called, I believe, Dr. Karloff. But he, perhaps slightly bizarrely, he looks like and sounds like Bela Lugosi. And I think he's voiced by David Graham as well, I think, Brian. So anyway, a bit of fun spotting some of the pop culture icons of the time, I guess.
Yes, and that was something that they would continue doing through most of the 60s. Having puppets and voices that would be sort of matches and little impressions of some of the pop culture actors and icons of the day. This production also uses a lot of stock footage of ships and planes and landscapes, which is something that you don't see as much of in most of the later Super Marionation shows, where they were doing a lot of their own model work for that type of thing. But they certainly used quite a bit of it in Supercar.
Yes, it is actually slightly unusual to see, you know, or it seems slightly jarring seeing the stock footage in Supercar compared to other Anderson shows. As you say, Brian, I think as their abilities increased and perhaps their budgets increased, they became well known for doing all this stuff themselves with landscapes and models and presumably with matte paintings and so on. But yeah, quite a bit of stock footage, which is a little bit strange.
It was interesting to see, at any rate. And we also, even by this point, had the close-ups of real human hands whenever one of these puppet characters had to do something that involved, you know, fine motor manipulation of some sort. You would see a close-up of a person's hands, and they used sort of tight rubber gloves that made them look a bit more like the puppet hands for operating a switch or opening a briefcase or anything that was a little bit too detailed to have the puppets themselves do it.
Yes, and again, you think of the models and props departments having to build two sets of models, one, you know, one third size for the puppets, and then build the same keyboard or briefcase, presumably for the actor's hand. But there you go. That was one of the things Anderson's team had to do.
Yes, and they did a tremendous amount of that. They had lots of things that had to be at multiple scales.
And of course, as we've said many times, and we probably will be talking about again, this was early days for the Anderson production team in a way. It's a black and white show. And I think we may have encountered this a bit with Fireball XL5, that the wires perhaps seem a little bit more visible to me in these earlier shows and slightly more noticeable than they do in later shows, when I guess they just got so much better at concealing them, or maybe it's slightly easier with the sprays they use on the wires when everything's in color.
Perhaps. There was certainly a lot of technique to how it was being shot, because however the wires showed up on the footage you shot, that would basically be what you ended up with. It was not a time where you could go in post-production and remove them as we have now.
Absolutely. And of course, as we've said a few times, these are the oversized headed puppets from the early days. And of course, that may, you know, some viewers may find that difficult to accept. They look a bit weird. It's that characteristic early 60s marionette, I guess, Brian, when puppets did have very large heads.
Yes. And often puppets and things like puppets are done that way. But yeah, it's certainly that style. And it's different from the much later work they did with more human-like proportions.
So one of the things we like to talk about on British Invaders with our shows is whether there was any spin-offs from it. And of course, dare we say that, you know, Gerry Anderson and I suppose Lou Grade were always aware of the possibilities of merchandising their shows, Brian.
Absolutely. Supercar appeared in comics. In the UK, it was in TV Comic with art by Bill Melvin. And TV Comic was a big institution for television-based comics running for many years. And in the US, it was in Gold Key Comics, and it was the first of Anderson's shows to appear in Gold Key.
Yes, and I, you know, as a comics fan, I should probably know more about Gold Key Comics from America, but I do know that they had this long association with Anderson shows in the 60s, that they were doing the US comics based on these shows. And I don't have any in my collection. I've never seen any, actually, but I probably should look into that more. Certainly the UK comics I'm quite familiar with, and we have done episodes about them in the past, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. There was also an LP released in 1962, which had a couple of episodes in audio form. So done in sort of radio style, complete with the Mike Sams theme tune.
Yes, so you could get that LP. And of course, you won't be surprised to hear that you could get toys, toys, toys. So there were miniature versions of the puppets themselves, which I guess, I suppose, Brian, they were the action figures of their time, really, in the early 60s.
Oh, absolutely.
And, of course, miniatures of the vehicles, including a very famous Budgie Toys production of Supercar itself. And if you're looking with interest on eBay to see if you can get hold of one of these, you'll find that a good example with its original box will now cost you about £750. So they're not cheap things to be looking for, I'm afraid, Brian.
If anyone has one in their collection, please let us know on Facebook. We'd love to hear what it's like.
Yes. In fact, you know, if you're on the Facebook group and you own any of the 1960s original Anderson toys, do put a picture up for us. Let us have a look.
Oh, absolutely. I would love to see that.
Of course, you know, in recent years, there's been a massive resurgence of interest in the Anderson shows, and the fan organization, which of course is called Fanderson. In 1998, they released a CD of Barry Gray's music from this series. And I think I believe it was paired with the music from Fireball XL5, so that you got, you know, a good length CD from it. But it might be interesting to listen to that, particularly in terms of some of the later theme tunes that Barry Gray did.
Yes, absolutely. Barry Gray did a lot of great work on the music for Gerry Anderson's shows for many years.
So it's reviews time, Brian. It's time to get into our own feelings about Supercar and sort of answer the question of, was it the marvel of the age? It's a perhaps slightly tricky one for us because, you know, we've covered some of the better known and certainly more colourful Anderson shows before this, before going back to this very early example of Super Mario Nation. So what would be the positives from the show for you, Brian?
Well, it was an interesting one to look at. I think the variety of kinds of stories and certainly for this crew, new and innovative ideas were quite neat. You know, they were already working with these spy and espionage ideas and the rescues and a lot of sort of different ideas that would sort of become bigger over the years. The vehicle which goes underwater and then comes out of the water to fly off somewhere. Those sorts of things. The vehicles being of central interest. A lot of these things that would become so well developed over the years were starting here.
Yes, I think, you know, that is the fascinating thing about Supercar, is watching the Anderson team develop and start off various science fiction things which are going to become so much bigger, better and more colourful in later shows. I guess, you know, at the time, the technology was very impressive for viewers, although it would, you know, it would go on to become so much better in the later shows. And as you say, Brian, it's got those interesting, exciting 60s themes of spies and technology and all these wonderful, weird science fiction things about miniaturization and mind control and so on. So it's interesting from that point of view, and to see, you know, Anderson's interest in rescues and, as you said last time, Brian, a sort of prototypical Thunderbirds in a way.
It very much feels like a prototype for Thunderbirds. I found, and you may not agree with me on this, I thought the black and white looked great for this. I thought it was a perfect match stylistically for what they were doing at the time, and the models and puppets they had. It may be that the wires were more obvious because it was black and white, or just because of what they had developed in their techniques at the times. But I thought the black and white looked great for this.
Oh, okay. I mean, I just felt that the wires were more noticeable for me, and that the puppetry was sort of still developing and it wasn't quite to the level that we'd later see it. But yeah, okay, it's interesting. I mean, as you say, for the time, the black and white is very good. You can see them, as you know, as I say, developing various bits and pieces. I noticed that for some of the underwater sequences, they're clearly doing the shooting behind the tank of water, which would be so famously used in Stingray. But for other parts of the underwater stuff, they seem to be filming just against a black velvet backdrop. So presumably when it's I think that Deep Seven episode, when they're rescuing the bathysphere and they're very deep down, I presume that's what they're using the black velvet for then.
Yes, although I think they did some shooting through a fish tank for that episode as well.
Right. So, you know, I guess they're just they're learning bits and pieces. They're using different technologies. You know, they're doing this remarkable model work, making things, as you say, burst from the water or explosions and fires and so on. And, you know, what a remarkable thing it must have been to be part of Anderson's team in the 60s, journeying out to Slough, to this industrial estate, and creating the marvels of the age, I guess, Brian.
Yes, and, you know, this was the first of the Super Marionation science fiction series, but it's the last one that we're covering. We've done the others now, and what you can see when you look at them is that through that entire time, you know, from 61 through 69, their sophistication and what they were able to do with this and how it looked kept getting better. And at this point, I think a lot of the flavor of the sort of old puppet shows and old marionette shows of the 1950s, that was still there. You were getting a lot of the what was new in the Super Mario Nation style coming in more and more, but it still felt a lot like what came before it and was just starting to grow in sophistication. And you could see things like how they were using real hands, real actors' hands in close-ups. You could see some of those things starting to work well and starting to be the sort of new thing that would be there for Super Mario Nation in the 60s. And I think they really kept getting more sophisticated that whole time. And the next show after this was Fireball XL5. And even the step from Supercard to Fireball XL5, I think, was quite a big one. And by then, it really didn't look like the things that came before in the 1950s. It was really something new and something looking like what we would see with Gerry Anderson's work as it went on.
Yes, remarkable stuff. I'm reminded of the fact that we quite like, you know, stories about production teams on some of the shows we cover, Brian. I mean, obviously with Doctor Who, we get sort of throughout its history, we've had teams involved in creating the show and then in carrying on the show, producers, showrunners, script editors, and of course the TARDIS crew themselves. And of course that changes from time to time. And here, you know, I love the Anderson crew. I love, you know, the names like David Graham, Meddings, Turner, Glanville, Barry Gray. And it's almost, it feels a little bit, I feel a little bit sad that this is the last of the 60s Anderson Super Mario Nation shows we'll be covering in a way. I'm slightly wistful to be leaving the wonderful worlds of Anderson.
Yes, they certainly had a wonderful ongoing thing there. And while they were separate shows that would last one or two seasons, Supercar was one of the few that had a second season. Thunderbirds did as well. It really felt like an ongoing project, even though they were separate shows. So you would have, they were working on one thing, then the next year they'd be working on something else, but it was like the same project with the same team, and they were always trying to look at what they had done before, but very much to move on to bigger and better and more sophisticated things. And that was a really successful thing that they did throughout the 60s.
Okay, so we've waxed lyrical about it and about, you know, the me getting somewhat nostalgic for Gerry Anderson shows. And we have said, I think, several times, Brian, that this is clearly early days, and we can see in this show the beginnings of so many things that will go on to be so much more in the other shows. Trying to judge it, you know, within its context of being the first Super Mario Nation sci-fi show, were there any, you know, particular things that bugged you about the show, sort of problems you had with it, apart from that, just, you know, the early days stuff?
Well, the puppets do look a little basic, and as you said, you can see a lot of wires. Just the general way that things worked, it wasn't quite there yet. So there were issues there. I think the writing was okay, but it was also still a little basic, and they weren't doing enough with it yet.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I think you're right. It does look a bit clunky, that some things are not quite there. The puppet design's not quite there. The writing, you know, would get so much better for some of the later shows. There's some bits and pieces that I mentioned along the way. I mean, it's the early 60s, so some of the characters do seem slightly stereotypical. You know, the European accents, the foreign accents seem a little bit unfortunate in places. But, you know, on the whole, I think we have to just sort of take it for what it was at the time. Probably remarkable then, not quite so remarkable now, Brian.
Yeah, there were unfortunately problems with the stereotypes and racism through many of the Gerry Anderson Super Mario Nation shows, and they were certainly here as well. I would also question the wisdom of including Mitch the monkey as a character. That was a little too much into the sort of early children's TV comedy element.
Yeah, I'm slightly puzzled by Mitch the monkey. I wonder what I would have thought about him if I'd seen it at the time as a child, and what I thought about Zuni the Lazoon from Farwell XL5, because you're quite right, watching him now, he's just annoying. It's just like, get rid of him, he's a terrible character. But there you go, maybe through a child's eyes it's more entertaining, and me watching it now I just think, what an annoying character.
Well, I think certainly in the UK, when Doctor Who came out in late 1963, that changed everything for television aimed at children. And children's television before that, certainly in the UK, I think most of it in the US and elsewhere, was a continuation of what they were doing in the 1950s. It was sort of simple, and it was done to be silly, and it wasn't giving the children who were watching it a lot of credit. And I think that changed hugely with Doctor Who, and I think the Super Marionation shows reflected that as well. And by the time you got to something like Thunderbirds, it was something that was very different, and I think the way it looked at its audience by then was very different.
Yes, interesting. As you say, Doctor Who, the game changer for television, certainly for children's television at the time. And yes, maybe we would do away with Young Jimmy and Mitch the Monkey after that.
Yeah, we've looked at one or two other sort of shows aimed at children from the very early 60s. And similarly, they were not giving their audience that much credit and had that sort of earlier feel that you might expect from things from the 50s.
Yes, the Pathfinders to Space series that we talked about spring to mind.
Very much so, yeah.
Okay, very interesting. I'm just going to mention one other thing, which is that I am a huge fan, obviously, as regular listeners know, of Barry Gray's music for the Anderson shows. But I don't like the theme to Supercar, I'm afraid, Brian. It doesn't grab me at all.
It's not great. It's okay. And I think it was improved when they did the version for Series 2 that had the Mike Sam singers on it, which has a much more energetic feel to it, not just in the harmonies, but in the whole way the thing was put together. I think even at that point, they realized that it was a bit simple and wasn't as attention-grabbing as they wanted it, and that was, I think, an improvement there, but they would go on to improve in later years as well.
Yes, you're right. The second version with the singers is a much better and more dynamic version altogether. The first version I don't like at all, but there you go. It's not going to make it onto my Gerry Anderson playlist, I'm afraid.
Fair enough.
And I do have a Gerry Anderson playlist on my phone.
Of course you do. So, shall we get to our recommendations?
Yes, I think so, Brian. I think our audience probably know how we're going on this one. It is, as I say, it's a complete DVD box set from the early days of Anderson and Super Marionation. Shall I kick us off?
Go ahead.
I'm not a huge fan of Supercar, probably because I wasn't born when it first aired, so I don't have that early experience of it at all. And I found it rather difficult. It's great to see all the early stuff that will go on to be and become Thunderbirds or Farwell XL5 or indeed Stingray, which I had so much fun with last year. But I can't really recommend this box set. I think your money is far better spent on Captain Scarlet and the Mistrons, Thunderbirds and Stingray than it is on Supercar. So it's, you know, unless you're an absolutely want to see what the early days of Anderson was like, then I would say probably spend yours and your family's money on some of the later shows, Brian.
I'm going to pretty much agree with that. I can't recommend this. It is not one of the better Super Marionation shows by any stretch. Even as a completist, seeing a couple episodes to see what it's like is probably enough. I'm not going to do a top five ranking or anything like that, but I will say that Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons is easily my favorite Super Marionation show. I think they did a wonderful job with that one, and they did some interesting things on some of the other ones. Supercar, you get to see some of the early developments there. I would say if you were to get the Blu-ray set that has the documentary filmed in Super Marionation along with the collection of an episode from each series called This Is Super Marionation, I think that is plenty to give you a flavor of all of the different shows with the very early ones like this one.
There you go. That's where you should spend your money, on that particular box set or Blu-ray, as you say, Brian. That's really worth the money.
That set and Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons, I would recommend. Supercar, I will not recommend.
Okay. And if anybody is keeping track, I do have a top five Anderson shows, but Supercar has not broken into it, so it remains unchanged.
Fair enough. So, in summary, Supercar introduces us to the amazing vehicle of the title, Supercar, and its pilot, Mike Mercury, who goes on all sorts of rescue missions and has to deal with spy-related espionage events and missions, and is also involved in various experiments and things with various organizations, and we get their headquarters and a couple of scientists along with a young boy and his pet monkey in this early Super Marionation puppet show that represents one of the early phases of the classic Gerry Anderson puppet shows of the 1960s.
Well done, Brian. And for those of you who are wondering what we're going to be doing next with Andersons, well, yes, we have finished the 60s shows, but we haven't finished with Gerry Anderson yet, Brian.
Oh, that's true.
And of course, next time, we like to do something spooky for Christmas. We've tended to concentrate on the M.R. James ghost stories for Christmas, and we've run out of those as well. But we have found you a chilling tale that we're going to be looking at next time. And it is the story of the other most famous haunted house in Britain, told in the form of Harry Price, Ghost Hunter.
As usual, it will be great to have a spooky tale to look at for Christmas.
Splendid stuff.
So until then, you can find all of our past episodes, Gerry Anderson related and otherwise, at BritishInvaders.com. Or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our Facebook group and the various discussions we have there. And I'm sure we'll be getting into some of the Super Marionation shows and our memories of those.
Yes, when this episode airs, chip in with your top five Anderson shows. Join in and let me know what yours are.
Absolutely.
Or come and join us at the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com, where British Invaders is a proud member. Internet streaming radio shows of all sorts of geek varieties. We go out Mondays and Tuesdays, but you'll find lots of other stuff there to interest you. Plug into your ears.
Yes, please do. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. It's Eamon in England saying this is not quite the marvel of the age.